What's going on, Rob? How's it going?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing great. Great. So today I'm joined by Rob Jones, the creative lead at Rev Partners. And we just got connected. By the way, you were telling me this interesting story before you were, the creative lead. You actually came from the world of firefighting. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I was a firefighter for the city of Pearl. I live in Mississippi, did that for 4 or 5 years. I've been a behavioral therapist is what I went to school for. I studied memory and psychology. I've been a CrossFit coach, done all kind of stuff in the past, but I had an opportunity to join the team 2 years ago, and I've learned more in 2 years about SaaS, B2B, or like all of that than I could have ever imagined from where I am now, which is at Rev Partners.
That's crazy. So by the way, I consider a lot of revenue operations people to be professional firefighters, but they're not putting themselves in mortal danger by any means. So kudos to you. You're the first firefighter, former firefighter to join the podcast. So we'll see how long that record holds up. I'm sure someone else will come along and take the mantle from you.
Yeah.
So as creative lead, what exactly is your role?
I've had a lot of titles already here. For a week or two, I was the commissioner of content, but I help head up the demand gen efforts at Rev Partners. We've kind of split it to demand gen and demand capture, which is top of funnel, basically everything until form submission. So video content, blogs, we have that set up, and then broken demand capture, the website, the back end, more of the like administrative and data gathering components. But creative lead, again, is more of, it's an interesting title. It functions more as a director of demand gen, but creative lead is, I make a bunch of weird videos. I was the orange suit wearing guy at the inbound conference. I'm wearing green today to rep RP, but that's me.
That's awesome. Did you get a lot of compliments on your orange suit or any press?
Yeah. So I was interviewed by the Boston Globe because that was the, at that time, 2022, it looked more like Comic-Con to me. Like there's just this weird guy in a very aggressively orange suit, very orange. It looks like a traffic pylon. But Vice Media talked to me, the Boston Globe did an interview, and that was kind of the impetus for this, for a lot of what I'd call success up until now. It transitioned me really from being a member of our sales team in an AE into what I prefer my skill set, which is video and content creation.
So I've been in the Salesforce ecosystem for roughly 10 years and then HubSpot for the last 3. And I have to say, I think both platforms serve a pretty good segment of their customers, and HubSpot's come a long way in terms of becoming a pretty strong sales CRM. So Rev Partners making its bet, a big bet really, to move to mostly, if not all, HubSpot, if I believe so, seems to be a prudent bet.
It could have turned out really bad. So shout out to HubSpot for the whirlwind of product updates, feature releases. They've really gone all in. Even Dharmesh making ChatSpot and kind of putting that into the ether to be able to compete with Salesforce and with Zoho, with all the other CRMs, Pipedrive, Monday.com, whoever's in that list. AI is kind of the thing now. So ChatSpot helped. But yeah, I think it, around the 4-year-ago mark was when kind of the non-compete ended with Salesforce, so that they were able to release some of the product updates. And I've tried to do a count. I know Kyle Jepsen and Max Cohen have like a Monday roundup where they discuss product updates from the last week for HubSpot. And it's like 30, 40, 50 pages upon pages of different feature releases they're putting out, which is necessary to keep up.
Yeah, I don't think I read 50 pages a week, so I wouldn't be able to keep up myself. But I did want to put my role play as a revenue operator supporting their demand gen lead, and thinking through, if I were to sit down with you, I'd be thinking through, how do you think about your core personas or your ICP? Like, how would you have described it? What's your process of going and creating one?
Yeah, anyone that we've... Number one is look at the data. So a lot of the changes and iterations made are on who is submitting forms, what type of people we're getting into these engagements with that close on the front end. And then more specifically upon delivery, who are the people that we're working with there, and how can we market to them? How can we create demand from those types of people? It's a wide swath, obviously, because revenue operations kind of functions to, as the buzzword is, align everything. You're going to be talking to leaders of companies, CEOs, COOs, chief customer officers. We primarily deal with VPs of sales, sales directors, marketing directors, And I mentioned this to you on the lead up to the call, but that kind of goes with the size of the org. So it's not typical for us to engage or to meet CEOs from gigantic, enterprise level corporations just because they have that functionality kind of spelled out. So targeting now and would be those types of revenue facing leaders, and we kind of all, I don't want to say alter the ICPs, but alter the tone and messaging to those people just from what's going on in the market.
Yeah, so generally with a sales leader or a marketing leader, even a RevOps leader, they are working towards a common goal, but they might have their own individual separate goals, which hopefully work well with one another. And so when I'm thinking about persona and ICP development, just like you said, lean into the data. If you don't have the data, then it's about experimenting and finding product market fit. But once you have a little bit of go-to-market, a couple of at-bats, you can start to look at the data, the opportunities, the folks who were in the opportunity to the lead up to the close, as well as what their titles were. Then you can start to do a postmortem on why you won deals, and listening to those calls, maybe even calling them and talking to them yourselves as a revenue operator, gives you a leg up to understand, what that ICP and persona is going to look like. And so when you're going out to message them, you have to have something to offer them. And we were talking about the concept of fractional versus RevOps as a service. And at first, I kind of scratched my head. I'm curious to, as you build on that topic, what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, so our value prop, being in HubSpot as a revenue operations partner, we have several products, right? But the core tenet is revenue operations as a service, which means you pay us, which is a team, a pod structure of a strategist, a technologist team, a pod leader, and almost like a scrum master traffic partner, which is, I'm not going to say exponentially cheaper, but it's a lot cheaper than hiring somebody to put in seat, right? You think of a CRO. So that's part of it. It also, from the, you just ask about revenue operations as a service versus fractional. The intent is that a lot of people that we work with aren't necessarily big enough yet to invest in a headcount or headcounts for the role. And there's almost this temporary tone to it, right? If you're hired as a CRO, it's supposed to be permanent, right? But this is a kind of a transition. We've had people that we've had partners for 2 or 3 years, so it's not transient in like a 1 or 2 week or 3 or 4 month type of way. But fractional, I think, instead of revenue operations as a service, speaks more to this person can come in and give value. It doesn't have to be forever. I also think it's, just getting into fractional a little bit more. Sometimes those people just assume the role that they're in as a fractional CMO, that you can become the actual person. So I think a better term would be interim. Like the NFL has like interim coaches that if they perform can ascend to that spot. But it's just so the benefits versus hiring somebody is it's a unicorn hire you're looking for almost all the time. Somebody that can think strategically and execute. There's a larger, longer ramp time to getting somebody like that onboarded and in seat and ready. Ours is a lot shorter. Typically, that onboarding kind of get to know your business inside and out process takes 3 or 4 weeks as opposed to 2 or 3 months. So when urgency is kind of the key for, as you said earlier, putting out fires and, building, updating processes, that's one of the ways we can impact it.
Okay, so in your warehouse, you have an option, a set of inventory where you can say, in this type of situation where you need someone on retainer, we're your entire team as a RevOps as a service. And that's different from someone who's fractional who's there from an interim. The second piece is if you just need us for an episodic shot in the arm, a one-time project, you can also bring us in. So I can definitely get on board with that. So then partnering with you here, let's say, for example, you've been given a strategy to go bring in as much awareness in terms of leads to the top of your funnel, generating that to opportunities. I'm curious, what type of metrics are you measured on in terms of, what does a successful quarter for Rob look like?
Yeah, that it's we're kind of redefining the nomenclature around not what an MQL and SQL and SAL is, but what it means for us specifically with automations and triggers and all that. It's typically those MQL metrics. How do I get the right people in front of us to go through this? So a lot of top of funnel metrics. I want to back up really quick because you said kind of episodic projects would be able to, hire RP or hire a revenue operations as a service provider. That's not how we think of it, but it's how the market thinks of it. So really the core message there, talking about getting the right message in front of the right people, is that your CRM is a product, not a project. So just like a video game or a car, anything that is updated, maintained, requires an owner, there's not really a set end date, because so many CRM implementations fail. I think they fail, and we would contend that they fail because the people doing them think of it as a project that has a very finite scope, defined end date, and that they're not going to have to be maintained or no one's going to own them after that. So we're challenging that and kind of saying that your CRM, whether it's for us, HubSpot, or other people, obviously Salesforce, there are product owner, or if your CRM is a product, you would need admin. Those are typically the owners of that product. HubSpot has tons of updates that need to be trained, implemented, thought through how you can utilize them. The product, which is your CRM, needs an owner, and that's more how we serve. So the retainer model, we would argue, is more important to have upfront going into switching, let's say from a even from Excel sheets to HubSpot, kind of starting off SMB, or a massive Salesforce to HubSpot migration, where you're changing CRMs entirely. That entire process needs an owner, and it probably doesn't have a start and or a finite end date.
I appreciate you, walking back and correcting me there.
I'll misspeak one or two more times during this, don't worry. So
No, I appreciate you. So thinking through the metrics here, right? So, generally when I've partnered with a demand gen partner, I've looked at, what are our goals, right? Generally, it's in the lead volume to opportunity conversions, and then there's a cost component. So I would love to talk through the volume component and your process. How are you thinking about redefining the MQL or the sales accepted opportunity? What's your process there?
It's not, I guess it's not really redefining it. It's more internal. And again, we kind of help to standardize that with partners who may think something is a MQL when it's not, or something is an SAL when it's in reality not. So that the nomenclature is important around all of that. I think that even the top of funnel metrics that I'm looking at, you really start to build waterfall math, right? So if we need to achieve this amount of revenue, this is how many deals we're going to have to close, which means this is how many historically, sales qualified leads from. So it really gets more into like impressions. It gets into the things that are harder to measure. So it's more corollary than causally. It's more correlation than causation. So a lot of, if I can get in front of more people and have more views, impressions, engagements, that type of thing on social or on our new website, has a lot of Wistia links that do a way better job than social platforms of tracking view length and how many people have watched it. It's kind of the YouTube version, but built into our website. Once we have more of those numbers, we'll be able to kind of curate the top number, right? How many views led to these amount of hand raises from which people that led to revenue? We're just still, I guess, the website and those types of analytics tools that we've now put in place is relatively new. So don't have exactly the numbers, but again, the more views and the more impact and the more people that you can appeal to with a message certainly helps that. Some of the most impactful metrics are very singular, like one. So for the example there is, I make a lot of humorous content on video, right? So how in the world is that going to impact revenue or drive any deals? At an inbound conference, somebody came up to me and said, "Hey man, this account that we sent over, I wanted to tell you it was because of this video that you made, and it was ridiculous, funny, comical, all this, but it kind of got me into the thing." The singular number is one. One time I know that a video kind of differentiated us as somebody that was an expert in the area that could tackle a problem and was just a reminder. It was very top of mind, and that led to 50 grand in closed won revenue for us. So those types of examples almost need case studies or some sort of thought process on their own. Whereas you might have, let's use LinkedIn or YouTube, a million views on a video or whatever, fill in the blank of which metric there, and it doesn't lead to anything. However, if you can make something that appeals to people and you are associated with an expert elite tier HubSpot, partner as we are, that makes sense. It's almost the appealing to a larger swath of people, ICPs, with humor instead of just targeting them with, do you have a chatbot problem? Do you need this help? Are you struggling to close leads? Those, if people are only in the buying process, 3-4% of the time, I would say people are in the I need a good laugh, right? process way more of the time. And then staying on the top of people's minds when they have 7,000 options. Again, with Salesforce, it's probably the same. Don't know those numbers, but there's probably a ton of people that help onboard Salesforce or consultants or engineers that do this type of work. For us, it's 7,000. So how do I differentiate our brand and tone and stay top of mind to those 7,000 people? And video content has been one way we've been successful in doing that.
That's cool. I love the idea of being, if you're in a sea of sameness, standing out is one way to get someone's attention. And I consider myself a practitioner, but I also build content for revenue operations folks, very similar to yourself. And I think there's a couple of tropes or messaging techniques that people use. So, for example, Jordan Henderson, he creates memes that are quite hilarious. I'm not sure how he does it, but he does it well. And I'm not going to be the person that's going to generate memes. My approach is to build something that's a takeaway. Can you take 1% or like a segment of something I posted this week and use it in your workplace immediately to make yourself look like a hero? And that's the type of content that I position. Then there's Rosalyn Santaolalla builds a lot of content working with founders and high-level executives, and she targets kind of a higher level persona. And to me, that's amazing. So everyone has their own wedge, their own lane to pick, and I find that you have to know your numbers. So, well, I love the idea of building waterfall math, like you said. How many people end up on the website? How many visitors is that? How many sessions are you getting? How much time are they dwelling on the website? Are they clicking around to different pages? And if they're clicking to the high intent pages, are we capturing that activity, de-anonymizing that traffic, and turning them into leads? Hopefully, even scoring these leads through behavior or firmographic, and hopefully unlock the MQL that we're, it seems like every business is always redefining. And then at the end of the day, it all needs to lead into opportunities that are truly qualified and are eventually going to close. Now, one thing you haven't mentioned, and we were talking about this, was this cat and mouse game of dark social. I think a lot of revenue operators really don't like getting a lot of sales calls, and unfortunately, we do. So I'm curious how you think about, building a partnership and a brand and getting to know the psychology of RevOps behind the dark social.
So shout out to, I feel like even mentioning Chris Walker's name, he's gonna summon here and have a very strong opinion about something. But he has built this in, I don't know if he built it in public, but his podcast talks a lot about this. He's brilliant. And a lot of his is his podcast drives tons of revenue for I just forgot the name of his company. It Chris Walker's on
Refine
LinkedIn.
Labs.
Refine Labs, that's it. Well, he has, yeah, so Refine Labs. So a lot of their revenue comes from that. And it's not as that he's done a really good job of figuring out how to kind of eliminate like first touch, last touch, and care about attribution along the way. But he knows that a lot of listeners are coming to him for work from that. And so that the dark social kind of mystery being solved is not, again, I am not a thought leader at all. But to me, it's more about trying to approach infinite like correlation rather than direct causation. So if I know that you've watched a couple videos, if I know that you've engaged on LinkedIn, if we know that you've downloaded an ebook, like all of these metrics, right, where you can track, if I know you've done all these things and then you eventually, you have somebody new in seat or you lose somebody and you need this type of work for us. Now it's gonna, you've heard us so much, it's organic. You go right to revpartners.io, submit a form, that type of thing. All it would show is that one source. It's almost about how many different places can you be and can you present solutions that you can, again, kind of infinitely correlate to revenue driven and those metrics you were talking about, SQLs that lead to close won revenue from opportunities. I just probably botched his whole messaging a lot, but it almost, it trying to solve and crack dark social and like complete attribution doesn't, I'm not going to be able to do that with my skill set, but I know that those types of things have happened. The one example I just shared, it happens often and it doesn't make as much sense for me to try to crack that, but I can put stuff out in tons of ways where there's a almost that buyer's journey, almost the prospects or listeners or viewers journey, right? They might not even be in a buying motion for a year. We've had people that have been hired here or that have come through, so not only on the close one revenue, but like attracting and capturing revenue talent is really hard. I mean, I can imagine you've probably talked to some people about, how do you find these people that are going to be the next like super admin and be able to execute this stuff. We've gotten people in because of some of the content and made a few great hires that have mentioned me. Like I've seen Rob's videos and whatnot, and we've also had deals closed from this. What needs to happen and what my focus is capturing those stories more so than the data points. I know the data points are there. It's not my skill set, but the stories, like the one I shared with you, are more impactful, and then using those to just very transparently and authentically put our skill set, what worked for us, how we operate, our culture, our values, our operating principles kind of forward, and then see if that resonates with people, both from a, attracting and retaining new talent perspective and a revenue generating perspective.
Yeah, I think dark social is such a great piece of branding for the unattributed type of leads. And there's a reason for that. I think a lot of RevOps folks, they know how the sausage is made, right? They're working on all the systems, all the tooling, they're creating all the custom fields to track all the attribution. And so one way of getting to the truth of what tools we should choose is to network with one another. And so I can tell you how many WhatsApp, LinkedIn private message groups, and Slack channels that I'm a part of. And I'm asking my trusted set of advisors, I'm like, what do you think about this tool? Have you seen these guys? What do you think? What are the
Right.
pros? What are the cons? And so that's the level of buying information that I'm getting. And I used to rely on, blogs, on, videos, and quite frankly, I'm just trying to get it from primary sources, right? I'm trying to get it from people who interact with the tool. And so that type of buying motion, that research has now shifted quite a bit. And so I think for a marketer and a seller, the job is tough. The job is tough to get our attention. So one last question for you. I always ask this to my guests. What's a moment of profound change or impact you've had on someone's had on you or you on others, either personally or professionally?
I don't think we have enough time for me to give credit. You'd be putting the speech or the music, like get off the stage. I'll use the, again, started as an intern, don't have a SaaS back. I guess now 2 years in, I kind of building my SaaS background and my tech background. But transitioning from firefighter to, I was a sales rep for a while and was an IC turned manager from being successful. But coming in here and having no idea what I'm doing and not being afraid to lean into that and just say, I don't have the answers, but the people I work with are really, really smart. They do. I can show you all of that has been super helpful. And then getting recognition for that. The moment was at Inbound in 2022. Again, long story short, I wore an orange suit almost to distract from the fact that I'm not like a super admin or I'm not the most technically proficient person in the world. Still, I'm not have my RevOps chops, if you will, have gotten a lot better. But that worked really well. It got a lot of attention to me as a, as a content creator, but it got even more importantly a lot of attention to rep partners just from doing that. And the question was like, who does that, but in a cool way, right? Like who thinks to do that? You might have heard like the Simpsons did it first. I am now seeing more like orange blazers and suits. Yamini wore an orange suit last year at Partner Day to present. I had like custom painted shoes last year, which I'm starting to see more stuff like that. So it seems like people are getting into that. Shout out Boston Globe, shout out Vice Media for kind of bringing the attention to me with the interview and article on the orange suit guy. I just think like my takeaway from this, you made such a good point earlier, trying to crack like dark social attribution is just a lot of authenticity is needed. And I think tying it back, that's what people saw in me. I hope that's what people see in RevPartners. There's a almost a buyer's bias because there's so much fake. There's so many people trying to sell you so much stuff that you just want somebody that you can trust and that has experience to give you an answer. And so if I can help provide that by how I build content for RevPartners or for myself or whatever, then that's the focus.
Absolutely. So, quick question for you, last one. How can folks learn more about you? How can they connect with you?
Yeah, check me out on LinkedIn. My name is Rob Jones, not the most unique name ever, but on LinkedIn. And then our website, revpartners.io. We just rebranded it. I actually made a music video about the rebrand of the song. I've been getting kind of playful feedback about, Rob, you don't ever put CTAs in. Your videos don't have a lot of CTAs in them. So I just made a video explaining the contact us form fill out on the website, which is pretty interesting. Check that out on LinkedIn too.
All right, Rob, you're a real one. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Jeff.